Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Welcome back to the Pomp and Joe Show. I'm Jason Mackey, in for the guys. More than halfway home already. Time is flying by. Thanks so much to Ray Fittipaldo from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette for joining us. Have another guest coming up, a good friend from the Harrisburg Patriot News, Max Ralph, to talk a little Penn State football. Going to shift into college football mode a little bit. I know, Austin, what you'll be doing around 4 o'clock today, watching the Sugar Bowl, I presume.
Oh, you know it. I want to know who Penn State's playing.
I know. Same. I cannot wait for that one. My six-year-old son has adopted two college football teams for no reason in particular. He's become a big Ohio State fan and a big Notre Dame fan. I don't know why.
Okay, two opposite ends of the college football spectrum.
I know. He's six, man. Whatever. He's just getting into it. So we'll be watching that one for sure. What have you made about Penn State's run so far? Predictable? What you expected? Does it change your perception of Penn State?
Maybe slightly in a positive way. I expected them to win both games, Jason. I was at the SMU home playoff game. It definitely was not the type of game that I expected it to be, where the defense completely dominated, because I was coming off of an Oregon game where Oregon made that defense look razor thin in the secondary. And to see what Ohio State did to it, just kind of fascinating to watch. I expected them to win both of these games, yes. And intern Dom put it this way, that the playoffs actually start now for Penn State. I don't necessarily fully agree with that. But I do think that this is where the rubber meets the road. This is where we're going to finally learn what Penn State is against either Notre Dame or Georgia, either team. Even though Georgia doesn't have Carson Beck playing, if they advance, it's still Georgia. Like, that carries a lot of weight.
They're right. They've the got best some pretty good players trenches. On that roster. Yeah.
No doubt about it. So they were double-digit favorites in both games. They were supposed to win. James Franklin always wins those games outside of one every 5 years or so. And he typically doesn't win when he's an underdog. So if James Franklin is an underdog against Notre Dame or Georgia and wins it, that will tell me more than anything in the last two games could have.
Who do you like in the Sugar Bowl?
I think Georgia's going to pull it out.
Do you?
I do. I just think that they're too tough for Notre Dame. Now, I mean, I do think it's interesting that the three teams that won their conference championships and got the first round bye all lost. Like that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
Partly you get into a rhythm. How much time off do you have? I don't think it factors that much for Oregon compared to Ohio State. I mean, Ohio State did just play a game last week, obviously, but Oregon had the same amount of rest going into its first playoff game that Ohio State did, because Oregon played an extra game in the Big Ten championship game that Ohio State did not have. So I think Notre Dame, Riley Leonard, I don't have that much confidence in them. It would not surprise me if Notre Dame wins.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be a coin flip game of Penn State, though, if Notre Dame played Penn State.
There's so much unknown, I think, because of Gunnar Stockton, who, by the way, has a great quarterback name. Gunnar Stockton, quarterback at Georgia.
Elite.
I love that. Elite. He's barely played. He hasn't had to play because of Carson Beck. He's going to make his first college start. And, yeah, I'm taking Notre Dame. I don't feel great about it because of some of what you're saying, the athletes on Georgia's side, and like, you know, the team around them is very good, and I'm not sure Notre Dame is on that level, but I think the quarterback is going to play a significant factor. Riley Leonard has been playing really well. I think you said that. Just the experience factor. Jeremiah Love was really good in the first round. I'm taking Notre Dame, but this is so weird, man, the way it just keeps setting up for Penn State. Like, I like Penn State against either of those teams.
Do you?
I do. I do. The way this defense is playing, one of the biggest surprises of the entire Penn State season to me, maybe the college football playoff, is how much they shut down Ashton Jeanty. He got nothing going, man.
Well, they are a top 10, top 15 run defense in all of college football.
He's the best running back in college football.
I know. I was not.
By a long shot. He was averaging 192 yards a game.
I was expecting him to run for 100 yards, and he ran for over 125 in every single game this year before Penn State shut it down. If they stopped Genty, that was the key to the game, and they were going to win. Now, yeah, it might have helped that Boise's kicker missed two field goals. They fumbled a couple of times. Like, Boise, a lot of portions, was trying to give Penn State the game, and Penn State wouldn't take it. Other than going up 14-0, but you know what I honestly think, and we'll put this on tape, and I'll probably record it, and we'll go back and we'll just throw darts at me when this happens. This is honest to God what I think is going to happen, Jason. I think that Penn State is going to win this game in the Orange Bowl that I am very hopeful to potentially go to. We'll see if that ends up coming to fruition.
Really?
There's a lot of plans in place. We'll see if things come to fruition.
All right. Congratulations on your success.
I'm decently optimistic, but at the same time, I'm not. We'll see. I think Penn State beats whoever they play. I think that Ohio State beats Texas in the Cotton Bowl, which is basically going to be a road game for them in Texas.
Yep.
And I think they're going to play in the national championship game. It'll be a Big Ten national championship game. All these questions and everybody's saying, well, James Franklin can really get it done this time. James Franklin can do it. This will silence all the doubters, and Ohio State wins on a last-second field goal. That's exactly what I think is going to happen.
That could not be any more crushing.
That Ohio State Penn State on a last-second field goal to win the national championship.
And think about
what I think is going to happen.
And think about all the like comeuppance on the Penn State side of things. Like, you've gone on this journey beating SMU, beating Boise State, beating whomever.
You get Georgia, Notre Dame.
You're right there.
And the bully rips it away from you. The bully of Ohio State, the big brother, that is, you've not been able to overcome over the last however many years, takes it from you again. That's what I think's going to happen.
I might start crying if that happened. I didn't go to Penn State. I'm not a Penn State fan. I have no...
Oh, I would drive to Atlanta if that's the case. I would drive down to Atlanta. I went to the Peach Bowl last year. I would drive right back down to Atlanta and say, well, here we go again.
Yeah.
It's funny. My sister and I, we were standing in the stadium for the Peach Bowl last year. We saw, you know, they promote these things like a year in advance, 2 years in advance. And they were like, next year's Peach Bowl is a college football playoff game, and we also have the national championship. And I said to her, I was like, wouldn't that be crazy if we come back here in like a year? Wouldn't that be odd? Now, I thought it would be for the college football playoff game, not for the national championship. But I think it's very within the realm of possibility.
I do, too. It would not shock me. I was very impressed. Let's talk about Drew Aller for a second. Because I was fascinated watching him early on, made two of the best throws I've seen him and really a college quarterback make all season. The Omari Evans touchdown, Tyler Warren in the back of the end zone. I mean, there are times where I look at this kid and think, he's ready. He's ready for the NFL. And then the more intelligent, or the few last intelligent parts of my brain take over and say, you know what, he made the right move coming back. He should come back. Where are you at with Drew Aller? Like, what's your level of confidence in him? Do you think he can be an NFL quarterback one day? I mean, when the dust settles, I'm completely comfortable with him coming back to Penn State. I think that's the right move for him and the team, but I don't know. What do you think of his play?
So I am a Drew Aller truther and a Drew Aller apologist.
You can't be both.
Well, I try to be. Drew Aller is, in my mind, an incredible quarterback. I defend Drew Aller to wit's end, which I probably shouldn't. Outside of the Ohio State game last year when he was just so awful, and I think it was that game, he was crying after the game, like how bad he played, knowing that he lost his team the game.
He was also like deer in headlights for that thing.
He was.
I was at that game, dude. The horseshoe, I mean, that was his first exposure to it. Anyway.
And he was completely overwhelmed by it. But he has stood up in big moments. I feel like if they had a true number one wide receiver, everybody would be saying Drew Aller would be the number one quarterback taken in this class. I think he's that good, but I mean, watching a full season of him play, there are still a lot of throws that he misses. There are still some mistakes that he makes. He takes care of the football decently well, but there are sometimes wide receivers that are open and Drew makes the wrong read. I feel like, I mean, every offensive coordinator gets criticized, but as soon as Penn State fans heard that Andy Kotelnicki might be leaving to take the West Virginia job and ultimately didn't, probably because, and I think he even said he didn't want to leave before the end of the season, then I think people would realize how important an offensive coordinator has been for Drew's growth and development. Like, he, I think, is going to go to the NFL and be a really good quarterback if he's given the time and given a good system. If he's thrown in like the Bears or the Browns or something like that, we've seen very good quarterbacks not be able to thrive there.
Yeah.
So I do think he made the right decision in going back, because one more year, and I think he could be a top five pick, where if he's drafted this year, it's probably back end of the first round. And is it the right situation for him? So
right.
I think he's making the right choice.
Yeah, I do too. And he shows those flashes of brilliance. Like starting out, he was 10 for 13, 144, and then missed on 9 of his next 12. Like, it's there, and I don't think it's all Andy Kotelnicki. I think some of it's affected by wide receiver play. If you look at what Penn State has at wide receiver, it's not an incredibly deep group, which is crazy. You know, we're talking about a team in the national semifinals without a true number one wide receiver. They've just kind of cobbled it together. Tyler Warren's their number one wide receiver. You've got 2 1,000-yard backs. You've got a really good defense. You have things you can bank on. But imagine if they can figure that out in the portal, or they can figure it out with recruiting or get somebody. Like, I'm watching Ohio State yesterday, and you got Jeremiah Smith and some of the elite athletes. I mean, I think Ohio State could easily win a national championship, whether it involves Penn State or not. Like, I am not at all dissuaded by what happened against Michigan. I think that's a darn good team. But anyway, some of the athletes that have come through there, imagine just one of them, Marvin Harrison Jr. You know, somebody on that level plays for Penn State, what that could mean for Drew Aller. So, I'm glad to see he's coming back. It's the right move. Not disagreeing with it. He can be infuriating. I understand that. But can also be really good, and he was for a lot of the time against Boise State. Anything you learned in the college football playoff games, Austin, so far, having seen 3 or 4 that you didn't know? Anything that stuck out to you?
Yeah, I love it. Don't change it.
Same.
You know, I'm completely fine with if you change the conference championships. The conference champions don't receive a first-round bye, but they get into the playoffs. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I'm fine with that, too.
You seed it 1 through 12, but conference champions do get in, so Clemson would still get in, Boise would still get in, but they wouldn't be ranked the way that they were. So I like the playoff the way it is. I would have originally made it 8 teams. They're not going to go back.
No.
You know, once you go to 12, you're not going to shrink the playoff. I mean, we've never seen that in any sport. They're not going to do it. It's so much money that they're making off of it.
I think I'd actually be good with 12. Because I don't love the timing of it. I don't like. I wish you could shrink it a little bit. I'd like to see first round games played in front of students before you go to neutral sites. I think that's a nice little perk.
I think it should be multiple games that should be held on campuses.
Yeah, I mean, I can see an argument for that. I do sort of acquiesce to the idea that there's a lot of money to be made.
Texter, Austin is biased because he's a Penn State fan. If you think that I can't put that aside and just show what my honest judgment is, then I don't know what to tell you.
I've really loved it though, man. I think it's fantastic. I agree with you on the conference championship things. I think there's some nips and tucks as far as the schedule and the timing, and the portal overlap isn't great. And, you know, none of this was going to be perfect. Even the narrative that, like, some of these games haven't been good and, you know, they've been blowouts or whatever, you're going to have that anywhere. You're going to have that no matter what you do. You're going to have that. I mean, shoot, you had that in the 4-team playoff. That's crazy. I saw somewhere Georgia had won their last two playoff games by a combined 118 points. Like, nobody's talking about those blowouts being a problem and change that. I've really liked it. I think it's great. Build on it. Build on the hype. That Arizona State game was absolutely tremendous. I know both of us were glued to our television watching future Steeler Cam Scataboo. That was a lot of fun. If they draft him, would you be okay with that?
I'd be very okay with
that. I'd be very okay with
that. Not a lot of speed, but he will run over anyone.
Dude, give me a backfield with him and Jaylen Warren. I'm in. And welcome back to the Pomp and Joe Show. I'm Jason Mackey, filling in for the guys. Austin Bechtold producing behind the glass. Talking a little college football this hour. And we're going to go out to the fan hotline to bring in Max Ralph of the Harrisburg Patriot News to talk a little Penn State and the Nittany Lions victory over Boise State. Max, what's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, Jason. I'm doing well. Glad to hear from you again.
Yeah. Glad we could link up and do this. How was the trip?
So, believe it or not, I didn't make the trip.
Boo! I thought you did.
I'll be out in Miami next week, but no. Actually wasn't in Phoenix. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the Nittany Lions instead and what led to that. This run defense, we knew it was going to be good. We knew it was going to be a part of this thing. I didn't expect them to shut down Ashton Gentry the way they did. Did you? Did it come as a surprise, and what led to it?
You know, I don't know that it came as a huge surprise. Like, they played Oregon obviously earlier in the year, and he had a good game against Oregon. But you know, the Mountain West does not have the same level of athletes across the defensive front that Penn State does. And I think when you look at what Devonjay Thomas and Zane Durant did in that game, it's not necessarily a surprise. Like, he still got over 100 yards, too. It wasn't efficient. I had a feeling he'd hit the century mark, but I'm not necessarily surprised at all that Penn State slowed him. I think that what Tom Allen has done in the latter half of the season, ever since he gave over the not the play calling duties, but the in headset microphone duties to Dan Connor and went up into the booth, he has just been lights out. And I just think Penn State was much more talented up front than Boise State.
Max, you tweeted something this morning about Nolan Rucci being part of their offensive line, one of the most improved players. Wondering if you could expound on that. And, I mean, they have 2 1,000-yard backs, Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. Not that I'm telling you anything you don't know, but what has led to this success? I'm guessing Nolan Rucci has been a part of it.
Absolutely, Rucci's been a part of it. And as much as I love what Rucci has done, it's not to take away from the guy whose spot he took over, Anthony Danko, was having a really good season at right tackle, too, before his injury. But Rucci, the thing with him, in all of his years at Wisconsin, his 3 years over there, he was really struggling to add weight and to be able to be in a position where physically he could handle the Big Ten competition that he needed to at right tackle. He comes over to Penn State. He gets up to over 300 easily. I think he's up to 315 now. Don't quote me on that. But his body looks better in his 6'8 frame. And trust me, he is a true 6'8. The kid is a giant.
Yeah.
But he looks better in his frame. And you can see it on the field, too. He's playing with so much more balance than he was when he was in a rotational role earlier in the year behind Danko. Now that he's the first guy in there playing every snap, it looks like he has better chemistry, too, with Sal Wormley at right guard. Like, last night, they broke a huge play. Excuse me, 2 nights ago. Broke a huge play where Rucci and Wormley both pulled around to the left side and really sealed off that C-gap for Singleton or Allen to run through. I can't remember which player it was. He's athletic, and he's filled out his body. And honestly, I think part of it just comes with how much he's playing. He looks more comfortable. And then as far as the two running backs go, yeah, Jason, the huge thing with them, they're healthy. I mean, Nick Singleton missed a game earlier this year. He was banged up later in the season, too. And, like, having some time off between the playoffs and the Big Ten championship, having a little bit of more than a week in between playoff games, Nick Singleton is healthy, looks it on that 58-yard touchdown, and Catron Allen, the dude is just – he's a mauler. Like, there's no other way to put it. He's an angry runner. He wants to run through you every single time. And with the way this offensive line has gelled up front, paired with their health, that's why this run game looks so good.
You're listening to the Pomp and Joe Show. I'm Jason Mackey, and for the guys, we're chatting with Max Ralph of the Harrisburg Patriot News. Max, of course, covers Penn State. And Max, before you came on here, we were talking a little bit about Drew Aller and his up and down stuff season, showing signs, showing areas where he still needs to grow. Austin and I agreed that he made the right move staying in school. Hope he does. I think that's going to be really big for him, and I'll be curious to see what happens when he does come out in the next draft. Where are you at with Drew? What have your impressions been of him so far in the college football playoff?
Yeah, I actually just had a long conversation with my colleague, Johnny McGonigal, this morning about Drew. I agree with you. I think he made the right decision. I think there's a very outside chance that he could still declare for the draft, depending on, like, if he just absolutely shines in the last two games. But I do think that the correct decision is for him to come back, because you saw kind of the perfect encapsulation of who he is as a quarterback right now against Boise State. That first quarter, he was playing like he could have been the number one pick in the 2025 draft. I mean, he was that good. The touchdown to Tyler Warren was an elite throw. The touchdown to Omari Evans was a great throw. And then even later in the game, the second touchdown to Warren was a great throw, too. He really teases you with his arm talent over and over and over again. He can play, he can throw any ball on the field. The problem is, like, every now and then we've heard he gets kind of happy feet in the pocket. Seems like, especially against Boise State, with a lot of the blitz packages they were sending and everything, wasn't picked up great up front. He wasn't necessarily helping in that effort, and was struggling to read things quickly enough in the pocket. And I think those are the spots where he can grow the most next season. But as far as his arm talent goes and his control of the game right now, I mentioned, like, all season we've seen him get really heated on the sideline, and not like at coaches or players or anything, mostly at himself, because he knows exactly what play is being run and how it should be run, et cetera, et cetera. He's in great control of this offense. So I think when you look from last year to this year, and especially right now in the playoffs, the growth that he's made has come in a lot of different ways, and especially with his demeanor and his understanding of the offense. So now, if he comes back next year, what he really has to do is just the nuts and bolts of his game, like polish those throws, polish his reads, and he'll be, I mean, I have no doubt in my mind he'll be a first-round pick.
Max, what did you sort of take from the Ohio State victory? Me personally, that the Buckeyes are on one heck of a roll, and I'm not sure I'd ever want to see them in the college football playoff, but what was your takeaway from that one yesterday?
It's tough because, I mean, obviously given the circumstances, like, you can understand why, but Oregon did win the second half against them. But like that start, I'm not sure that any team can emotionally handle that kind of start from an opponent. Like Oregon, you give up those long touchdowns right away. You just can't come back from that. And I don't think that this is any discredit to Oregon right now. Like, I still think that they were fully deserving of the number one seed for no argument at all. I mean, they were 13-0. I watched them in person in the Big Ten Championship. They're a great team. I think Ohio State, the best thing that ever happened to them was losing to Michigan, because Ryan Day, it seems like he just kind of like decided to throw everything out the window in terms of trying to run the ball, establish physicality, play like a Big Ten team. And he says, okay, we have probably the greatest wide receiver prospect maybe in history, at least in the last 10 to 20 years, and we're just going to use him like that. And so, like, it just seems like they've had a philosophy switch. Their defense is so veteran and playing angry right now. I certainly would be scared of Ohio State if I was on their path to the playoffs. And, you know, to relate it back to the Penn State angle, the team held them to 20 points. So, you know, I think Penn State matches up well with them, and I'd love to see that matchup in the championship again.
Couple more minutes with Max Ralph of the Harrisburg Patriot News. You can follow Max on X at @MaxRalph_. Again, talking Penn State football here. The perception of Penn State, Max, I think they've overcome any sort of frustration that existed about not winning big games. I could be wrong, too. To me, you win two games in the college football playoff and you get to the national semifinals, that should count for something. Do you think that's, you're out there more than me, you live there. Is that an amenable opinion, or is that maybe a little bit too far down the road? Just what do you make? Did they erase those sort of questions?
I think my stance is that you can look at this season specifically as a categorical success right now. Preseason, the goal was simply to make the college football playoff, kind of move the goalposts a little bit when you see they draw SMU and Boise State. And you say, well, these are two teams they should beat and be in the national semifinal. Well, guess what? They did it. So those are good things. This is, so far, this is exactly how it was supposed to go. And that's a credit to James Franklin and everybody on his team. I mean, they have handled business here. I do maybe balk a little bit at saying that the big game James sarcasm stuff is gone, because I think these are still classified as games that he was supposed to win, which he wins. Like, he wins games he's supposed to win unequivocally. And I think, still reiterating my first point, like, this season is a success. They have gotten as far as they were supposed to. Everything after this is pretty much gravy. But I'm not sure, I'm not ready yet to say Penn State has, like, arrived and broken the big game stigma right now, because there's a much bigger game coming in the Orange Bowl than this one is right now, that would have been against Boise State.
Max Ralph, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
Of course, Jason, anytime.
All right, take care. Max Ralph from the Harrisburg Patriot News. Appreciate him joining us to talk all things Penn State and college football. I know this, I cannot wait for the Sugar Bowl in a couple of hours. Again, as Austin said, 4 o'clock this afternoon. Plenty to get into, digest, and enjoy. Welcome back to the Pomp and Joe Show. Jason Mackey in for the guys. Austin Bechtold behind the glass producing. Have a treat next hour. Austin and I are going to draft sports movies. We still doing this?
Yes, I think
you in?
We'll make it work. Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. We're going to draft sports movies, maybe establish some parameters. Want to have some fun in the final hour. We know we'll have some fun with Jeff Hathorn at 1:35. Jeff lives his life directed with fun. Fan text line, it's brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personally injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. The 50-minute mark on the Fan, a little bit early, but that's okay. It's brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on Route 19 in Peters Township. So I wanted to talk about the obscure, the wild, the unexpected sports stories in Pittsburgh sports in 2024. The obvious one for me was the Rowdy Tellez bonus situation. You couldn't make that up. And the fact that that even existed is something that I think is fascinating. So a lot of times contract details don't get out. And there's a guy named Ethan Hullahan in Pittsburgh. Well, he's about 2 hours east of Pittsburgh and does a phenomenal job. Ethan does not get enough attention. I wrote an A1 story on him a couple years ago about why he does what he does. And he should be a professional resource for how doggedly he tracks down MLB financial information. And Ethan does this for everybody and every player, minor leaguers, the most, you know, the absolute minutia. But where this matters becomes things like he's tracking down Rowdy Tellez's contract and bonuses. And so if we didn't have Ethan, the Rowdy Tellez situation would never be known. That's how you know about the Rowdy Tellez contract situation, because Ethan Hullahan, who lives about 2 hours east of here, he's an accountant, I forget whom for, was able to track that and pointed it out. And so, yes, the Pirates DFA'd Rowdy Tellez 4 plate appearances shy of him receiving a $250,000 performance bonus, which of course blew up and they were criticized for it and they should have been criticized for it. The unfortunate thing to me is that was so avoidable. You could have taken that scenario and turned it into positive PR like that. Would have been so easy. I mean, the play there is you play Rowdy Tellez. If you really want to bring those guys up, you play Rowdy Tellez one last time, get him his 4 plate appearances, get him his bonus, send him on his way. And then you say, and you probably leak this to a local writer, you say, we wanted to get Palacios and Peguero up here, but we were aware that he was 4 plate appearances shy of a performance bonus. We didn't want to cheat Rowdy out of the money. We appreciate everything he's done. We understand he's a veteran. It's kind of atypical to cut him the last week of the season, but this really mattered to us. We just didn't want him to lose his money. Get all those details articulated. And then you come out and somebody goes, The Pirates spent $250,000? They didn't have to? That's different. And then you obtain, you know, a minor thing with changing the narrative. But that was a wacky out-of-nowhere storyline. And think about 2024 in Pittsburgh sports. We had the Jaromir Jagr bobblehead fiasco. Austin was talking about that. A couple days after the Rowdy Tellez thing, you had a similar situation with Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. If that happening one time wasn't weird enough, then you had IKF, who missed out on a bonus in a similar way. And I'm convinced they didn't know about it because they came to him the next day about an hour before the game and said, hey, this exists. Do you want to play? He's like, nah, I'm good. Kind of mentally checked out. You could go to football. Look at George Pickens. There's about 5 things I could cite there. Fighting Greg Newsom in the end zone instead of jumping for a Hail Mary. Snap management? What the heck was that? Ripped the guy down by his face mask. Went berserk after one block. Post game said the Browns weren't any good, which isn't wrong, but probably not the type of thing you say. And that they were aided by the snow. Same snow the Steelers played in. Brandon Ayuk didn't go away. Stayed at the goal line the entire year. And it was a storyline that the Steelers couldn't avoid. Any wide receiver that's out there, they're linked to him. Kenny Pickett, Pitt's favorite son. Everybody loves Kenny Pickett. Remember when the Steelers drafted him? It was the most warm and fuzzy story ever. He was going to walk across the facility, rule the South Side. Pittsburgh loved it, some Kenny Pickett. And then Kenny Pickett throws a tantrum and said, nah, I'm good. I don't want to back up Russell Wilson. Omar Khan trades him. Didn't see it. A lot of stuff I didn't see. I didn't see Duquesne men's basketball winning an NCAA tournament game. Not sure I saw Penn State volleyball winning a national championship. I didn't see Pitt volleyball being as dominant as it was the entire season and then falling short. I probably didn't see the Pirates breaking camp with Jared Jones in their rotation. All the, you know, Super 2 suspicions that we've seen over the years. Players just miraculously show up and they're fully developed the second week of June. Jared Jones up with the big club. Paul Skeens up with the big club May 11th. Very atypical Pirates decisions. Keep going a little bit. This offseason, how many of you expected Derek Shelton to be gone? How many of you expected Ben Cherington to be gone? Probably a good number. They still here. Mike Sullivan in Penguins land. I can't believe Mike Sullivan's still here. I did a piece at PostGazette.com, a sort of year-end wrap-up piece wrapped around Festivus and Seinfeld. And in there, I sort of joked that said, Mike, I didn't expect to see you at the table this year. Hockey coaches are fired faster than in any other sport. Mike Sullivan's got 9 lives. And it might have even been the right move. The Penguins are on the upswing. They're at least competitive. They might sneak into a playoff spot. That's not completely insane. Still not the move I would have made, and that's not because I don't have a great deal of respect for Mike Sullivan. I do. I just think you get to a certain point in your season, you expect results, and the Penguins weren't getting any. They might be topping out with what they can do with this roster right now. That's not Mike Sullivan's fault. Anyway, it's been a year of wacky stories. Austin, do you have anything to add to the list? Anything I didn't get to?
No, I think that you touched on a lot of them there. There are some other Pirates ones that just kind of immediately come to mind for me, but the Kenny Pickett one is still one of the strangest Steelers stories.
It really is.
You could also go back to somebody in the media saying that George Pickens showed up 10 minutes before a game once and played in the game. I wonder how factual that actually was, but George Pickens ripping off Jordan Lewis's face mask, and man, there's a lot of different George Pickens things too.
Yeah.
I feel like Tristan Jarry every year is becoming more and more of a story just by the basis of, but there's a lot of positive Penguin things. Sidney Crosby, 1,600 points, 600 goals. Crosby, Malkin, Letang, another year together. They've already surpassed Jeter and the crew with the Yankees.
Yeah.
There's a lot of positives to look at, but there is still, there's a lot of strange that happened this year, and I still feel like we're missing a lot.
Yeah, and that's what I'm going for. Like the milestones and Sid playing well, eh, get that out of here. You know, I want the weird stuff. I want what we didn't expect. Maybe that'll be what Michael gives us. Michael's in the car, wants to talk about Sidney the Crosby. Michael, you're on the fan. What's up?
I got one positive and one negative. I think Sid's accomplishment of passing Mario was just something that, I mean, as a rookie, could you have imagined that happening? And him still being here, playing the way he is, the age he is. That and the absolute ghost of Carlson past has just been shocking. Carlson's signing and the way he's played.
Not great.
I got no words.
Not great. And the thing is, Michael, like, it's not that Erik Karlsson's a bad player. I just wouldn't pay him $10.5 million. If I had Erik Karlsson for $5 million, I'd be thrilled about it. I'm not paying $10.5 million, right? Maybe it's $10 million exactly. I don't remember off the top of my head. It's just you're paying way more than you're getting.
Another one with Sid is him always signing for $8.7 million. They're saying he could have left between $50 and $60 million on the table.
Absolutely.
That superstition.
Absolutely.
That's a wild one.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys are fantastic. I appreciate you.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you listening and giving us a call.
Give a shout out to my little boys, Thomas, Rowan, and William. It's Rowan's birthday tomorrow.
Happy birthday, Rowan. Appreciate the call, man. Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, it's a good thing Sidney Crosby didn't have, 99. I guess it's not that bad. They still saved a lot of money.
What about O'Neal Cruz running into the outfield from shortstop to try to make a play on the ball in Houston?
Oh, gosh.
That ended up being the first domino that derailed the season.
Yeah, you're right. There was an amalgamation of things there, wasn't it? And not bringing in a lefty to pitch to Jock Peterson?
I was at that game.
That was another one?
Watching Jalen Beeks warm up in the bullpen, watching Chapman warm up in the bullpen, and they didn't bring him in.
Going to be giving Pirates fans PTSD, not that they've ever forgotten that sort of succession of events. But, yeah, I mean, that's David Bednar, 2-time All-Star, turns into somebody that is just a total liability out there. 577 ERA this season. But it even felt like there was more wild and wacky beyond, like, the on-field performance. And the Steelers, there's always something.
There's something. Deontay Johnson getting traded and ended up getting traded out of Carolina, running backwards to Baltimore and not even being able to get onto the field in Baltimore because he must have been a bad teammate, and then they ended up cutting him.
Running backwards to Baltimore. I see what you did there.
He did.
I see what you did there.
He ran back. His career trajectory, Jason, nowhere but backwards.
Oh, boy.